Hi, everyone. First, I'd like to thank the organizer for organizing this beautiful conference. And so this is a very enlightening meeting so far, and I hope I can contribute a little bit here. So today I'm going to talk about how cells communicate with the environment and how does environment drives cell migration. So I'd like to show this picture of satellite image of Earth at night. So you can see that humans don't uniformly distribute it on Earth. And so one of the reasons is that they are governed by external environment. And for example, temperature, proximity to water, so have seeing river running through the city is attractive to many people. And also internal person-to-person communication. So this part is becoming more and more important as the internet gets developed. So in cell, as we have seen many talks today, many of us are thinking about this question, how does cells move? How do they make a decision? And we humans have brain and all sorts of advanced structure, but cells are much simpler. So one of the questions is that I have been thinking about is in physics, if you're given an object, given an environment, say if you're on the Earth, then you can do F=ma and you can predict a lot of things. So the question is, can we do that? If we give cell an environment, can we predict where they are going next? So clearly you've seen this movie, the movie in the middle three times now. It's clearly the champion of all the movies. So you can see that cell migration happens from birth to death. Follows us all the time. And so in all these situations, somehow cells can find the right place at the right time, move to the right place. So in development, this is the formation of a tubal heart, which is the first organ that mammal form. And so this, basically the cells are following the gradients that the mother has placed in the egg. And in this case, you've heard it's the chemicals that bacterium that's secreting, that's attracting the immune cells to follow it around. And in this case is tissue repair where endothelial cells are plated on a 2D substrate initially uniformly, but because of the growth factor secretion and the cells interact with each other and they can form these tube-like structure, which is a basis of our vascular system. So cell clearly sense its microenvironment and make next move. The approach that we have in my lab is we basically broadly divide the language that the cells talk to the environment into two components. One is chemical gradients, which basically is the stuff they secrete and through that they talk to each other. And the second is mechanical stress. So it turns out the cells also modify its environment, and then through that modification and talk to its environment. And the question that we want to answer is can somatostasis. So this is a problem that many have looked at extensively due to its clear clinical relevance. So normally, if a benign tumor stay put, if they don't, the cells don't go anywhere, it's not lethal. And it is when the tumor cells break away from primary tumor and take a hike in this vasculature and go to the secondary site, form a secondary tumor, that's when cancer metastasis came, and when the tumor is most lethal. So the question is, how can they decide? What is deciding factor, whether they're going to stay put or leave? If they leave, how do they make these decisions? So you can see that the tumor microenvironment is quite complicated. It has an extracellular matrix around it. It has other cell type. It has blood flow and interstitial flow. So from physics background, we took a reductionist point of view, and we tried to identify key driving forces behind tumor cell migration. And so it has now been generally accepted that the genetic materials are important, but it only tells half of the story. The other half is in the environment. So I will basically tell one story on each part, one on chemical gradient, the other on the mechanical force. So the chemical gradient was a much earlier work. So this is a collaboration with Melody Schwartz at the EPFL. Now she's at the University of Chicago. And also Jeff Segal at the Einstein College of Medicine. So most of the work I presented here on tumor cell is done by BJ Kim, who's a postdoc in my lab, and Yu Ling and Yang Jun, who are an award graduate student in my lab. And Ricky Hasler was a graduate student of Melody. So the question, the choice of chemokine is motivated by a clinical observation that for many cancer types, the first metastatic sites are lymph nodes. And so we also know that from this beautiful work by a group from Germany, that they found that in malignant tumors, the three of these chemokine receptors are highly expressed. So we decided to investigate two of these, CXCR4 and CCR7. And so the idea is that if immune cells using these chemokines go to lymph nodes, would it be possible that tumor cells do the same thing? And so I came from an engineering lab, so we always making little gadgets for every experiment we do. So we made this little chemical gradient generator. So it's very simple. It's a 1 millimeter thin agarose gel, and we pattern 3 micro channel in it, and flow chemokines on the one side channel, buffer on the other. So through molecular diffusion, you get a gradient in the middle, and we put cells in the middle and look at how they responded to the chemical gradient. So the advantage of this is you can define the chemical gradient really, really well. As long as you flow the fluid flow of a specific concentration, you get a steady gradient. So using this device, we looked at how a dendritic cell, which is an immune cell, and tumor cells respond to CCL19, which is the ligand to CCR7. So in the case of dendritic cell, so I must say that this movie is 2 hours, and the tumor cell movie is 16 hours. So the immune cells move a lot faster than the tumor cell. So the response of dendritic cell to the chemokine gradients, you can see that it's really very sensitive. It basically moved like a soldier to go from one side to the other. However, when you look at the tumor cell case, they are not as responsive. And on top of that, heterogeneity is clearly displayed in this movie. So you can see that for the immune cells, most of them move, they are more rounded, they move in the amoeboid fashion, while in the case of tumor cells, they actually can change phenotype. They can either move in amoeboid or in elongated mesenchymal-like. So we actually later on, we find these two are really interchangeable. You can add EGF or different things in it. They actually can come go back and forth. So one of the advantages of using microfluidics is we can do quantitative measurement. So one thing we did is we tracked the cells and we use average velocity along the gradient direction as a measure of chemotactic prowess. And so here is the average velocity of dendritic cells as a function of gradient. So in this case, you can see that we can really change gradient very precisely. So in this case, in this case, we change the gradient from wide range. And so what we find is that this chemotaxis is actually governed by the receptor ligand kinetic binding kinetics. So this equation here is basically assuming that if a cell is sitting in the gradient, I take the difference of ligand receptor binding sites on front and rear, and take the difference. That difference is described by this equation, and it fits really well. So basically, unlike bacteria, it is temporal sensing. Here, it's spatial sensing. It's sense the gradient in space. And a similar thing happened to tumor cells. But you note that the magnitude here is significantly different. This is a good thing for all of us, because otherwise tumor cells will do a lot more damage than it is now. So so this is at least 10 times less sensitive to the chemokine. And however, they follow the same kinetics. And also from this fitting, we can get the kinetic constant, which you can also get it from a biochemical method, and this constant from our measured from this fitting agrees with the independent measurement of the KD. So basically, we have learned from this set of experiments that dendritic cells have a higher propensity for chemotaxis, and also tumor cells are very heterogenetic. And I want to make an advertise here that the microfluidics is really allow us to do quantitative measurements that we can take data that is amenable to theoretical verification. And so we also did a number of other things since we already had data. And so one thing is to quantify the heterogeneity of tumor cells. And so in this case, we find that the velocity does not follow Gaussian distribution, which is a random walk distribution. Rather, it follows the Levi flight. And more importantly, when we add the chemokine gradients, so Levi flight basically tells us if the tail, the distribution tail is flatter, then there are more rare events. And so here it basically says that the rare events increases with the increase of chemokine concentration, and it peaked around the kinetic constant, the ligand receptor binding kinetic constant region, which is around 55 nanomolar. So this set of experiments basically told us the tumor cell migration is governed by ligand receptor binding kinetics, and also immune cells have higher chemosensitivity, and tumor cells are highly heterogenic. So this is a half of the story that I would like to tell. So I'm going to switch gear, migrate to the mechanical stress. So this work is in collaboration with a theory group of Vivek Shenoy and also Herbert Hui at Cornell. So Vivek is at UPenn. And all the data is taken by a graduate student in my group, Matt Hall and Marino Pandey. And Xin Zeng is Herbert's graduate student, and Farid was Vivek's graduate student. So I want to mention about cell migration in 3D. It is now accepted that cell migration on 2D is quite different than 3D. And in 3D, it's more like the cells need to grip onto the rope and pull. So this is before I heard Denise's talk, pull and retract. So, but it's a different situation. In this case, the cells are surrounded by matrix. In Denise's talk, it's surrounded by other cells. So in this case, you can see that the cells basically needed to grip onto the network and pull themselves up. So naturally, the network environment will be very important for how cells can migrate. So the way that we looked at how cells communicate with ECM is we first identify that their main way of communicating is through traction force. So we designed this method to measure traction force of a single tumor cell. So in this case, we sprinkled green fluorescent beads in ECM. So these beads are anchored, cross-linked onto the ECM. So when you see the beads move, the ECM is deforming. And you can see that when the tumor cells move through, the ECM deform. And knowing the ECM property plus the deformation, we backtrack the cell traction force. So this is one of the displacement plot. So each of these arrows is a bead displacement vector. So it turns out that collagen is actually not that trivial to model. Many of you probably know. So it's not just nonlinear, not just viscoelastic. One of the important things is the collagen can be realigned by the cell. So that was basically the key point before we can actually fit our data. So we made a different kind of collagen so for our cells to generate force. And so basically at a different concentration, different way of polymerizing, cross-linked, non-cross-linked. And we also measured the material properties using a rheometer. So one of the way to get the data to be to fit to our theoretical model is really to take into the consideration that these network actually gets aligned at the cell around the cell. So in this case, the y-axis is displacement of the matrix around it and the distance away from the cell center. And so you can see our struggle of fitting different model. So first we thought nonlinear should work, and it didn't. A linear clearly didn't work. So eventually, when we used the Vivek's fiber model, in which he incorporated an isotropy due to the cell alignment into the system, we get a really nice fit. So this alignment is clearly seen in this picture, where you can see that the fiber is, these are collagen fibers, really gets pulled by the cell and gets aligned. So one of the things we learned is that the cells exert force onto the matrix, and on the other hand, the stiffer matrix also talk back to the cell, and the cells exert more force in a stiffer matrix. So there is a back and forth crosstalk. So first, cells pull on the matrix. So one of the things that is interesting is you see these pink line here. So these are the onset for strain stiffening of the collagen network. So basically, we pull a little bit on collagen network, they can resist, still not align. At some point, it start to align. And that's when the strain stiffening starts. And what happens is the cells somehow knew that strain stiffening happens, then they stop. Increases strain. So that's that basically lead us to look at the distance at which the cells can transmit force. And we find that different matrix, so from left to right, is a more homogeneous isotropic matrix to more anisotropic matrix with a large pore size, and you can see that the force transmission in this case is expressed by the gel deformation is transmitted much further in the collagen with large pore size. And so this is also verified by the modeling that we have with Vivek. So understanding this will allow us basically to change the material property and to instruct cell movement. So in this experiment, we cross-linked collagen used sugar. So this is one of the common thing in diabetic patients where the sugar level is in the blood is much higher than normal patient, and we find that this could be a link to the clinical observation that the diabetic patients are more likely to get cancer than non-diabetic patients. So in this case, you can see that with sugar glycation, the matrix is much more porous, and such that it promotes deformation of alignment of the matrix and promotes tumor cell invasion. So right now we are also doing the other way. We are adding hyaluronic acid into the matrix such that it gives a little cushion to the matrix such that the cells cannot align it as easily and in that case to inhibit tumor migration. So this is an ongoing project. And so I talked about stretching, and we're also doing compression. And so, you know, as mechanics, you stretch it and compress it. So this is also a fresh out from the lab. We basically had made tumor spheroids, and we used the transwell bottom to compress the tumor spheroid. And our preliminary data shows that both inside the spheroids, the cells are much more motile, which we call more fluidy, and cells are also more invasive under compression. So that's the two stories that I like to tell. And so basically, in summary, there are two key drivers for cell migration. And one is chemical gradients, and One is mechanical stress. So the hope is one day we could look at a microenvironment, identify these key parameters, and can predict where cells are going to move next. Thank you.